Rob Stone from Fox Sports.
Hey guys, this is Cole Liker.
Hi, I'm Neil Collins.
You are listening to the Unused Substitute.
The Unused Substitute.
And you're listening to the Unused Substitutes.
Get off the bench!
Hey there, little Red Riding Hood, I
ball's gonna bounce down, it's three in the box. Bicycle kick! Goal! Rowdies! What a play! What a shot! And it's 1-0 Rowdies!
Good evening and welcome to another fun episode of the Unused Substitutes. This is your co-host, my name is Steven. Currently on mute is my co-host Matt, and we are actually going to start the show with a special guest. So you are listening to the Unused Substitutes podcast. We're live with you right now on Radio St. Pete. We're part of the Beautiful Game Network and sponsored by Roughneck Scarves. My special guest, and we'll start the show tonight with him, is president of Ralph's Mob, Aaron Redkeese. Aaron, how are you doing this evening?
Hello, hello.
So we brought you on because September is a big month for the club and for you guys in the mob, for a lot of charities and a lot of different charity events that are happening. So we know of at least three that are happening, so we wanted to go ahead and bring you on and explain what is happening specifically this weekend and what is happening coming up for the rest of September. So, Aaron, I'll go ahead and give it to you here for a moment.
Indeed, thank you. And I just wanted to say that you guys are doing God's work, by the way.
Well, I mean, in all fairness, we've seemed to have good premonitions of Rowdy's result. Calling us a deity might fit.
So, this month is actually quite active on the charity front. Have quite a few things going on, but first and foremost, just trying to spread the word about the opportunity to train with a legend, train with a Rowdy's legend in the name of Georgie Ristoff or Keith Savage, that we're basically raffling off an hour-long training session with both of those guys coming up in the off-season, after the conclusion of this season. So that raffle is ongoing. Basically, two winners will be drawn randomly on October 12th, which is the Indy 11 game. So we'll be drawing the winner of this. Prior to that game, tickets are one for $5 or five for $20. And all the proceeds go to our general charity fund to help us support future endeavors like Gold and youth soccer, et cetera, things like that. So that's the big thing. That's kind of the charity that we want to push and get the word out, because that's really unprecedented. I mean, we had a lot of work in the background to trying to get this going. Multiple people had their hands in organizing this. I mean, obviously Georgie has his futsal league that he's doing. Keith does his Savage Soccer youth training. So both established in the world of actually training and things like that. So this is a great opportunity for kids of youths, and obviously I'm sure that many adults would be geeking out on this and trying to get a day in the sun with both of these guys, I'm sure. So I don't think that'll be a problem, but I think it's a fantastic opportunity, so we definitely want to spread the word about that. Also, Go Gold is something that we've been doing for quite some time. I mean, $1,500 donated over the just the past 3 years alone. And we're also doing that again this month. So we'll be donating. We're actually splitting up the donations with a total of $500 that we'll be donating to Go Gold once again this month. And the immediate would be the pet food drive that's in conjunction with the team for the team's Roughs and Rowdies event that's going on this Saturday. So we'll be doing the pet food drive. We'll have this tent set up next to Mike. I'm sure everybody knows where Mike is in the corner. So we'll have Jonathan set up there, and he'll be taking all the pet food, and they'll be donated to the Humane Society of Pinellas County. So yeah, lots of things going on, lots of give back to the community kind of things like that. And like I said, I mean, the train with one of those legends would be awesome. So.
Oh yeah, no, certainly. Getting Keith Savage and Georgie Ristov for an hour. I mean, those are sessions that would cost some serious money. I mean, that's certainly not something that would just be for free on a normal Wednesday night type of deal. I mean, as far as that session, I mean, so that's going to be it's be an individual session. One person, one winner.
Yes.
Gets an hour long.
So essentially, you'd be buying the raffle for the chance to win either one of those. You don't get to choose which legend you get to train with. Obviously, we want to keep it fair. So,
okay. As far as now, is there an age restriction for what you guys are looking at? As far as what the ideal is for who gets that. That opportunity, are we talking children? Are we talking up to teenagers? I mean, what are the guidelines at the moment as far as how that works?
To be honest, I don't have any guidelines in regards to minimum age requirement. I mean, I guess, you know, within reason, I suppose. I mean, I let you be the judge of that. I mean, you know, is your 2-year-old ready? You know, I mean, it's, you know, when it comes down to it, I mean, I'm sure they're up for, you know, training. Children, like I said, Keith runs a youth program. So, you know, and his age is, I think, 3 to 13 or something like that. So I'm sure we can essentially do any age. But.
So as far as that's concerned, the proceeds for that are contributing to the essentially what you guys do each year for Go Gold.
Yes.
Do I have that understanding?
That's correct. So all the proceeds will go to Go Gold and the youth soccer initiatives that we have going on as well.
Okay. All right. So then furthering that here, you said we got the donation for $500 is what is looking like is going to happen this year for Go Gold from Ralph's Mob again.
That's right. That's correct.
That is fantastic. Seriously, that is honestly great work. It's something that we've been doing for a couple of years now. I know we did it back when I was president, going back a few years. So that's a tradition we do love, and I'm glad you guys are continuing that, because that is an important aspect of the community outreach that we do as a group. And not to mention, it shows our commitment to the team as well, because it's important to show that we care about what the team cares about. And obviously with the story of Cole and getting everything involved in the first place, going back many years, that is always a great thing. I'm glad you guys are continuing that tradition.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely. And that, you know, that comes down to the community and everyone around us as well. I mean, it wouldn't really be possible without everybody's help and everybody's contributions to all of this. So.
Yeah. And that's absolutely the truth. The other item that obviously coming up this weekend, pet food drive, because it is the what are they calling it? Is it Roughs at the Park? Roughs at the Pitch? I don't know.
Roughs and Rowdies?
Roughs and Rowdies. Yeah, sure. There we go. We'll run with that. So we got pet food. I'm assuming it's not specific to cats or dogs. I'm assuming no one.
Yeah, lots of question marks in regards to how that's going to work. But
So if everybody comes bringing crickets, then that'll be a problem.
Yeah. That's right.
All right. Awesome. Awesome. And I'm sure you'll probably have like a picture or something taken with all the food and the donation and having it arrive at the Humane Society. So that'll make for a great moment to for some social media clicks, because, you know, we're all social media whores, and that's what everybody does nowadays. Welcome to 2019. Welcome to 2019, baby. That's right.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And come on, you Rowdies.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us to let us know what was going on, because we did wanted to get that in there, especially since this is the second show of September. And of course, we have our first home game coming up this weekend. So thank you. We'd be looking forward to seeing you out there, Aaron. And so you guys are bringing your dog too, right?
Right? Yeah, and maybe. That's debatable. We have a few days to decide on that.
Fair enough. All right, Aaron. Well, we will see you this weekend. We appreciate you coming on the show. Love you, brother. We'll see you this weekend.
Thanks, guys.
And that was the president of Ralph's Mob, Aaron Retkes. He's been a longtime drummer of the Mob. He actually did drumming back in his younger years, which is why he tends to be pretty darn good at it. And we love him in general. He's a great guy to be around, and he's fantastic for the group as a whole. So,
are you calling him old? Is that what you're trying to say there?
He's older than I am.
So anybody older than you is just automatically old.
Well, I mean, I'm at liberty to call them older if I want, if it's like factually true.
You children these days have no respect.
You're welcome.
How's it going, Stephen?
Oh, it's going great, Matt. So obviously you've had quite the busy day, but
yeah.
I'm glad that you were able to come on and get everything going.
Me too. I'm going to light a little candle here so I can try. I don't want to go into explaining all of it because it'll be the entire show.
Oh, sure.
I just need I need some fire here to de-stress. I'll let you look at the candle for a little bit. Help
you'll
you chill
let me
out
look
too.
At the candle. I all appreciate right? the fact that I get to see a burning candle. It's like I almost want to have this simulcast on my TV. So it's like Bay News 9 has with Christmas. They
right
always
the
have like
the
fireplace.
Christmas log. Yeah.
Yeah. See, I want to simulcast that candle up on my TV. So when we're doing the show, I want to see that. I want to see it. It'd be a nice, peaceful image. It'd be fantastic.
What we can do, and I was going to bring this up last week when we realized all of a sudden there's webcam support, we can actually simulcast this screen. We could send this whole thing out on YouTube if we wanted to.
The world's not ready for that.
Many worlds aren't ready for
we
that.
We could, but...
That new planet I was reading about today where they discovered moisture in the atmosphere on...
yes,
it's still
that
not,
exoplanet.
It's
yes.
not ready for this.
That's true. Yeah.
I'm not ready for this. Look,
we're faces for radio in every way knowable.
And not even like real radio. We are faces for internet radio.
Yes, the self-degrading of the show continues.
The type of radio where you can't accidentally come across us in your car.
That is a...
I don't know. Maybe we're preventing accidents. I don't know what the thing is, but yeah. Thanks for Aaron for coming on. Now, do you guys have to address each other, Mr. President? Even though once you're out of office, it's always we had a collection of the living mob presidents.
For what it's worth, there's no set precedent for that. But generally speaking, it just kind of depends.
That's because there's never been a mob version of John Adams who came up with like a 15-word title for the president, and everyone else just said, no,
yeah,
Mr. President. Aaron says we should start this for sure. Aaron taking on my role for the beginning of the show of just typing, well, he hasn't gotten there yet, but I was typing some semi-inappropriate stuff in the chat section there. I guess, Your Excellency.
Yes.
Your Honor, the Mob God.
The Mob God. There we go. That's it.
Oh,
jeez.
Yeah, I had kind of an insane day. Like, I literally just sat down to finish up the some of the stuff for the show notes and listen to you guys talk to. We're just going to pretend like this show is therapy for me tonight. Well, let's just do it that way. So let's get into it. Like, 3-1.
So this past weekend, guys, we won.
We won a game on purpose.
Yeah, and we did it like pretty substantially. Like it was.
Yeah, we did, and I pointed this out during the game. Which, again, like part of the reason why I wasn't there Saturday is still ongoing this week, leading into my issues from today. Everything when we had Ryan Davis on last week, everything he said is what the Rowdies did. He said we need to score early to give the players, especially the defenders and the goalkeeper, the confidence of playing with the lead. We need to get Juan Tejada going.
Yeah.
I mean, it was we were kind of getting into to help me, Obi-Wan Tejada, you're my only hope territory. You like that? I've been saving that one for a little while.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
I now have like images in my head. I'm getting ready to Photoshop later. but got him going not once but twice. I was a little nervous there for a little bit because if you recall my pinned tweet on Twitter at the top of my page, Juan Tejada hat trick and I get a tattoo. So I was nervous because, like, on one hand, I really want him to do it. That'd be pretty cool. Like,
tattoos be damned. We're going to do it.
A rookie, you know, first of all, he's knocked in 10 goals on the year, which is insane.
We've got two double-digit goal scorers this year. What is this madness?
Has not happened.
What is this madness?
I had a gut feeling that this was the first time ever, but it wasn't. We went back and checked. So I don't know if we ever told you this. We have an unofficial stats department. Do you know this?
Yes.
Adam Martin.
Yes.
And Adam said, no. Happened back in 2013. Luke Mulholland and Georgie. Luke had 10 exactly combined between the NASL fall and spring season. Georgie ended up with like 15 or something like that.
I think it has to be 13, right? Because
was it 13? Oh, it might have been 15 overall. Remember, it might be 15, including the cup.
Seba broke the single game mark, right? For 14 in a season. He had to have scored 13.
14. I think it might have been 15, right? Including Open Cup, because I think counting for Seba is just the league.
Either way, the fact that it's only happened one other time in 10 years, it's still like, holy crap, what is the season and where did it come from? I mean,
especially
now, I will say, do you know why we won this game?
Because you called it?
Besides the fact that I'm a deity, yes, no.
You're a pod
no,
god? We got mob gods and pod gods tonight.
Pod god?
There's the episode title right there, mob gods and pod gods. I don't even have to think about it. Makes my evening easy.
Endorsed. There we go.
All right, tell me why we won this game, other than the fact that we scored more goals than the other team.
Charlotte played with three defenders.
You think these teams would learn?
You would think. You would think they would figure this out, but no. They came back with a three-back formation, and we punished another team doing that. And I'm secretly giddy because it, of course, furthers my own ego of the fact that I keep preaching the fact that we beat teams with a three-back set. But still, it happened again, and we looked pretty darn comfortable for stretches of that game.
It also didn't hurt that the three backs they played were not the best level of defenders out there.
Yeah, no.
Because let's be honest, against half the defenses in this league, I don't know that Tejada is that open to get either of those goals to tap in. I mean, they were quintessential Tejada goals. The way you want him making that move to the back to kind of be there either for the pass or the to clean it up and maybe knock in a rebound. And that second one, he's just completely unmarked.
Oh, the second one was gross. Like, that player I think it was Roberts that was defending on that play. And, I mean, he literally just, like, stopped playing and didn't even bother looking around. And Tejada just kind of waltzed up there when the ball went to the other side. When Leo dribbles to the other side, Tejada just starts to slow jog. And Roberts just, like, stopped paying attention to his surroundings.
I think Indy just scored again, by the way.
Jeez, you're going to interrupt like that.
Yeah. Yeah. They scored again.
Well, that's okay. It's Indy. They're supposed to. In all fairness. I mean, they're playing Ottawa. Unfortunately, we were really, really, really hoping for a draw, but it's Indy, and they're good for a reason. So,
hey, I still don't – it's not over till it's over.
Yeah. So for those that don't know, obviously, which would be all of you, Matt and I were joking around about, I think before the show started, that we were really hoping that Ottawa was going to come back and do a 1-1 draw because it's Ottawa and that's what they do in Canada, is 1-1 draws all the time, because that's what Edmonton always did for the longest time.
Except they are playing in Indy, I think.
Well, no, I'm saying teams in
Canada. Oh, okay, just teams from Canada. Gotcha.
Edmonton did it for the longest time.
Right.
I think even Montreal did it back in 2010 when they were still with us in this division.
But no one did it to the way Ottawa did it, by having a keeper fall down when a ball got anywhere near him and then lay on the pitch for 18 minutes.
Yes.
Knowing the referee would only give 2 minute stoppage.
The masters of time wasting. But yeah. God. So anyways, this week, this game, we won 3-1. And again, it was, again, Tejada played a fantastic game comparatively. The first half, he had 5 defensive recoveries in just the one half. And they weren't like even all necessarily like transition plays. Because I remember one something that we talked about was having him doing defensive recovery work maybe towards the midfield on like a quick possession transfer. No, he was getting defensive recoveries on our own half. So he was really kicking it. Again, if I had stats for distance run in a game, I would bet that he probably had one of the highest numbers, because his work rate was off the charts, which is amazing, because it's exactly what Ryan and us were talking about last week. I thought that was fantastic, and that was a big, big, big reason that we had a 2-0 lead when he came off the field as a sub.
You know what it means?
Say what?
You know what this means? Tejada listens to the show.
Yeah, right.
He must.
No, it just means that Ryan sprinkles all of that spicy goodness all over the team when he's giving his knowledge. That's what it means.
When he's making his soup?
When he's making his soup.
Nice. My hot take, there was no bad or ugly. Even letting in a goal, I can't even count that in there, because you know, enough chances you're going to give one up, and that was it was a double save, right? And then it goes in on the third attempt. Like,
is another situation of just another like poor job of trying to clear the ball out on a set piece, which is kind of funny, because it's like, hey, well, this just happened to us the other day, you know?
It's kind of like they're all watched the USA Mexico game and said, let's play like America.
Oh. Can we not talk about that, because the women are the only team in the USA that matter right now?
The same way we can not talk about Colombia and Venezuela playing at Raymond James last night, and apparently no one around the town knew about it.
No. Okay, so this is actually one of the interesting things about that. The English speaking world had no idea that game was going on.
So I wanted to look and see. I didn't get a chance to. What do we know the attendance for the game?
It, from what I understand, pretty measly. Pretty measly. But, and that's the thing, though, is there were folks on Twitter that are Rowdies fans that they were like, I knew this game was happening. Why didn't you know this game was happening? And it kind of just gave another point to me about just how isolated the Hispanic, the Spanish speaking segment of our community is from the English speaking. Like, how those communities, even though we all live in the same place, are entirely separated. And there's just so little blending between them. For instance, for those that don't know, I watch the USA games in Spanish. Every time there's a USA game, I'm watching it on Univision. And I don't remember seeing an ad for that game on the during the USA game, which I thought was crazy to me.
Right. And like,
because for the USA Mexico game, there was not an ad for Colombia. So like, it's like, even for me, I had no idea that game was going on. Two, for lack of a better word, world powers. Because it's not like, I mean, Venezuela could probably beat most of the teams in the world right now. I mean, considering there's 220 nations,
right,
or whatever it is,
they could take down at least 111 of them.
You know, like, I had no idea. No idea. And I follow the sport religiously, and I had no idea.
And so, you know, I said something about it, because I saw Garrett mentioned it on Twitter, and I was like, oh, that's new. And I 100% get that, like, I'm not the target demographic that they're looking for. And I wouldn't have been able to go last night anyway, but it's just insane that you have a game that's fairly significant happening in town, and it's just not common knowledge, whether or not it's common knowledge in the community at large, but just common knowledge in the soccer community around here. Like, even if I couldn't have gone, it would have been something we could have mentioned on the show. People could have known about it. We could have advertised it, could have done something that way. It's something I would have mentioned at least if I'd known it was going on. Like, hey, looking for something to do on Tuesday night, Colombia and Venezuela.
I think one of the things that catches my mind, though, is it only furthers the problems. It really exemplifies the problems the Rowdies have had for several years, where, like, we have no idea, I think, if I'm being honest, I don't think we have any idea how to reach the Hispanic population in this area and how to draw that crowd into the stadium. People harp on it all the time, but I think this Colombia-Venezuela game highlights how difficult it is to bridge the two communities.
Yeah, and that's a topic where it's been the drum, and I've been the Aaron Rettkes of that drum for a while now, only not with as much rhythm. but, yeah, that... And I was just thinking about it yesterday because they announced the entire lineup for Florida Cup, and I think we'll talk about it a little bit later. No idea right now if there's going to be any games played here or not. I haven't gone through and read the press releases because everything I get's in Portuguese and I got translated anyway. But I mean, there's some serious potential. And we saw when Nacional played Warsaw here that game
was so awesome.
There's a huge number of people that are nearby and don't come. And if we could get them to, it would transform everything in the stadium.
Yeah, it is a mystery to me. I loved, absolutely positively loved the Nacional Warsaw game. I thought that was great. But yeah, I mean, it is what it is. By the way, the teams, from what I understand right now for Florida Cup, just while we're on the subject, yeah, as well. Corinthians.
Yep.
Palmeiras.
Mm-hmm.
Atletico Nacional.
Yep.
And Spartak Moscow.
Oh, this is we were talking about this at the bar last night during, I think, like halftime of USA and Uruguay. We all want to dress up as. Did you ever watch Aqua Teen Hunger Force?
I've never even heard of Aqua Teen Hunger. What is it?
Aqua Teen Hunger Force. It's filler, basically. It's background noise, but it's sometimes there's a character in there that we're like looks like a Russian ultra. Like we always want to show up dressed like this guy Carl and for that game.
Yeah. Aye, aye, aye. Well, and for what it's worth, I just thought this was funny because if you go to Florida Cup's website, the banner photo on the website is the Nacional game, the Nacional Poland game in Alang. That's the banner photo right now. It's the smoke bomb. It's so great. Anyways, all right, enough of squirrel moments here. Wrapping up on Charlotte, just so we can get through this segment and get on to the next one, which I believe will probably be Open Cup discussions. A little teaser there for you to stay around. All right. My big thing on this game, a lot of it had to do with I thought this was one of the better games that Doherty's played.
Okay.
Doherty had a fantastic night, I thought, as far as his presence on the field. First half, him and Adoro played very distinctly right-left for the defensive midfield slot. His passing numbers were near perfect. He only missed 4 passes all night out of 39. Several recoveries, things of that nature. Nope, I mean, nothing like crazy, but his presence on that field, he did interrupt. He doesn't get credit for a lot of some of like the plays that he made, but the pressure that he applied actually did mess up the transition play from Charlotte on more than one occasion. And his ability of marking and anticipating a pass and marking a man before the pass to make sure that the pass couldn't really be made. It wasn't feasible. Like I said, there's not really a stat for that. But he did it a lot. And then what ended up happening is they did an adjustment because in the second half, he did not stick to just the one side of the field. Him and Adoro played more loose up the field as far as between the boxes. And I think that was an interesting tactical switch because there's some in my mind, there's some weird discussion as to when that took place on the field and whether that was tied to Gonzotti sliding back into an attacking midfielder role. So I don't know. I'd have to kind of, like I said, it's easy to watch the game and to kind of feed your own bias. So it's hard to kind of read through that sometimes, but it there's a chance that may have been why the second half played out the more it did, because Guizzi doesn't know how to position himself as great as an attacking mid. And it happened again this week where he doesn't have the right mindset for it. He's been too good of a goal scorer this year for him to go back into a midfield role. Like, his positioning just when he's an attacking mid just doesn't make sense. Like, even Poku struggled, but even Poku was doing better than Seba was at times during that game. But I mean, overall, you mentioned it earlier. You can't even do like an idea of a good, bad, ugly when there really was no bad, ugly.
No,
it was a solid performance all around. We got a little lucky that we weren't tied at halftime, because it very easily could have been a 1-1 game at halftime. It also very easily could have been a 2-0 game at halftime for the Rowdies, because there was at least one penalty shout that I think we should have gotten or should have had. Whatever, proper English is for schmutz. We very easily could have won that game a lot more than what we did.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm okay with the performance. I mean, it was a comfortable victory, and we needed that after the last two games.
Yeah, and honestly, that's my biggest good, is it's been a while since we've seen us beat teams that we should beat the way we should beat them. And this year we've done it a number of times, and we're going to have another chance on Saturday, because let's be honest, Atlanta United is a team that, you know, when I'm looking forward to this weekend, I'm looking forward to the gold things, the pet stuff, because it's like the opponent's almost, and, you know, it's okay for us to think like this. I hope the team's not doing it, because Atlanta, you know, anything can still happen. But, like, honestly, the last thing I'm worried about right now is who the other team lining up is, because it's Atlanta United. Like, okay, whatever.
Oh, yeah. No, this week there's not much of a preview. Here's another little tidbit for the later part of the show. The preview for tonight is going to be really small.
Yeah.
There's not much to talk about. That team stinks, and we better kill them.
So,
there's your preview.
We won 4-1 before. We it should be at least that. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, really.
Now
yeah,
watch, really. we'll go out there and win like 2-0, and we'll be all despondent next week.
Yeah, right. George will put up certain banners up in the section, because it's just not good enough of a win or something.
The emoji's going to reappear. I love the emoji.
In all fairness, we've actually brought the, if you remember that old TIFO, we have the like TIFO now, the one of those four panels. We still have the thumbs up. So in all fairness, you'll probably see more of that one, I think, this year. I'm just saying.
Well, you know, now that Facebook has all the different like faces you can make, you can do the like, the love, the laugh, the everything else. We're going to have ones to go along with all those now. The crying one. Crying one would be perfect for when you draw 1-1 against Charleston.
For Faith Night, we'll have the hands together emoji. See, there you go.
That could be controversial. Is it a high five or is it prayer hands? Who knows?
Oh, jeez.
Could be high five. All right. Is there even really a debate on man of the match? And I know you mentioned the game Tenari had.
Yes, there is a debate on man of the match. And it's funny because Aaron is listening in on the chat. He's listening in on the show, and he's actually got a chat feature, so he's been talking to us the whole show. He actually brought one up that I actually
you can make a case for that.
Well, I'll give you the floor first.
Conference locked.
Oh, wow. Reminded me, since we saw Aaron listening in, I was going to just lock it down so no one else just randomly shows up and starts talking to us.
Oh, jeez. Anyways.
Just a second.
Who was your man of the match?
Look, you know, the easy way, and I'm sure I haven't read the report on USL Soccer or USL Championship, whatever.com. The easiest way to go is to say Tejada had two goals. And now, honestly, they were pretty easy goals. It's two of the easier ones he's going to score in his lifetime, in his career, which is just, you know, we're watching the beginning of it right now. But for him to get two goals when he's had a little bit of a dry stretch, when we've been in a tiny bit of a slump compared to previous results, not just taking the two goals in isolation, but the two goals for kind of what they mean for the team overall. And again, in a game, you know, he does these two goals against, you know, Indy. Then all of a sudden we have to go change our shorts mid-game. Yeah, it's just against Charlotte. But it was necessary. Like, just because it's something you expect them to do, like, they still have to go and do it. So I'm taking the easy way out, some people are going to say. And I'm going with my main man, Obi-Wan Tejada.
Obi-Wan Tejada. I hate you for how cool that is. Anyways.
There's a two-pole in that somewhere.
There's all sorts of, like, TIFO material in that one sentence. That's amazing. I think the actual man of the match is controversial. I don't think it necessarily is as easy as just crowning Tejada. Now, granted, it is.
I will say this, the We Love You is not going to be controversial at all. You better be on the same wavelength as me. But we'll get there later.
We'll get there. We might have to use our little private chat feature for that.
I'll put it this way. I've already mentioned the person in another context tonight.
Oh, jeez. Anyways, so there's a legit couple of shouts for player of the week, or as far as man of the match for this one. Tejada's an obvious one.
And you know why else? I'm going to interrupt you again.
Oh, you suck.
You know why else Tejada gets it? Because why? USL was so stupid, they can't even put him on first team of the week. So right there.
You know, it's funny. I saw that and I'm like, I'd have to go back and look at the players they picked to see why they picked them. Because you know me, I'm analytical about everything.
Because they're biased, that's why.
Everything. You listen here. They're biased.
I'm supposed to be having pre-match beers with the host of Steal Some Time at Al Ings Weekend, and I'm going to blame it all on them because they are going to be the faces of the USL to me. unless I see Jake Edwards in the parking lot, and then it's on.
So as far as man of the match.
One more thing. No, I'm just kidding.
Again, Tejada's the obvious one. I think there's a legit theory for Malik Johnson. Malik did an unbelievable amount of work down the right-hand side of the field this week, and I think it's noteworthy just because of the fact that it was offsetting for Charlotte the whole week. He was out dribbling just everybody seemingly at will. But my player of the week.
I mean, Malik was smoking guys so hard that he probably had to take a midweek random drug test.
Well, and that's different.
That one fell kind of flat.
That one was interesting.
But true.
So, I will say this. My man of the match for this week happens to be Poku. And the reason why I'm going to give it to him this week, he was put into a role he hasn't played much this year. And yet, he was fantastic. Especially, I mean, obviously he got subbed out, but in that first half, his numbers were phenomenal. 30 of 31 passing. He had 38 touches on the ball overall. Two of the passes were key passes. In other words, they created a chance. They created a shot on goal. He didn't officially get an assist, but he had 6 defensive recoveries in the first half, which is an astronomically high feat number, especially when you're the attacking midfielder. I thought his presence on the field was absolutely amazing. And I think that's where I'm going with the player of the week, is I'm actually giving it to Poku.
I thought you might have gone with the Tenari call there.
Huh?
You were mentioning Tenari's game earlier on. I thought you might end up going with him.
He didn't play this weekend. What are you talking about?
What were you saying before? I mean, this is what I get for trying to type and do things one time. You weren't mentioning Tenari before?
No.
All right, my head's exploding.
At least if I did, I don't remember doing so. That's hilarious.
Maybe I got into some of these medications that I had to stop and pick up today. It's entirely possible.
Right.
Well, if he had played, he'd have been man of the match, I'll tell you that.
Okay, so having fun with that. I think that just about wraps up this week. We killed him. It was great. It was fun. Other results this weekend. Let's move on here. It's 8:40. My goodness. Other results this weekend that were notable. Pitt only got a draw against Louisville. The Charleston Battery this past weekend did beat Indy. And St. Louis defeated Nashville 1-0 this past weekend. Just saying here, Matt, there's still a chance that they're going to finish in the 10th role.
And also in addition to losing to us this weekend, Charlotte also lost one of their players for the season, one of their defenders. So
that team's just going to be cannon fodder for the rest of the year, basically.
Yeah, that's cool. That's kind of what I'm looking at.
So going on tonight, of course, as we mentioned earlier, Indy and Ottawa are playing right now. The last time we looked in on them, Indy was winning that game 2-0. So that's unfortunate for us. It really is, because I think that officially drops us back down to third.
Yeah,
we put in third. Table.
Well, third by a point, and also Indy's going to play again on Saturday. So,
yeah. So in general, they have a game in hand, and we'll get into the points per game and everything, and how that resonates. The other three games that are happening this weekend, Birmingham, who of course has just been on a ridiculous streak of late, is playing St. Louis. That's a game between number 9 and 10 on the table overall. That is a really, really important game because both teams are kind of starting to turn around a little bit. I might say Birmingham's been on a streak. St. Louis is maybe turning the corner. Couple of wins in their last they got 3 wins in a row right now.
Yeah, what, 9 points in 7 days? It was a nice little week for them.
That's a huge game now, considering they're only a point separated on the table, and we're only down to we're down to the end, guys. There's 7-8 games left, depending on which team you are. So yeah, that's gonna be a huge matchup for those two. The other two notable games, Pittsburgh and Charleston. Obviously, Charleston right now out of the playoff picture, trying to fight their way in it. Of course, Pittsburgh's trying to fight for a top four. And then Nashville and Birmingham again. Well, not again, but Birmingham plays again on one of these notable games. They play Nashville, I think it's a Tuesday night game, if memory serves, if I looked it up right. So, yeah, Birmingham has two games against key opponents before we come on the air next. So that's a huge week for them. So we'll see if they've got what it takes.
Yeah, I want to keep an eye on this Birmingham St. Louis one, because it's one of those that you can talk about it and get it, hype it up a little bit. Two teams on a bit of a run, something big to play for. One of those, because I think if you look at the table right now, especially in the East, because who cares about the West? No one's locked in yet as far as having officially clinched a spot. But I think it's safe to say we're down to three teams looking for two spots, that 9th and 10th position. I think everything else above it may not finish in those spots, but those are going to be the other 8 teams. So yeah. Anytime you can get a game like this, and now watch, it's going to get all hyped up and end up in a 0-0 draw or something. It wouldn't be a surprise. But yeah, it's gonna be fun to keep an eye on that one too.
Yeah, that's a game that if you want to go back and watch, you definitely want to go and watch that. Birmingham and St. Louis.
While we've been doing this, I've been trying to put together a quick and dirty Obi-Wan Tejada picture.
Oh, jeez.
I'll have to tell you off air what it looks like, because there's no way I can publish this thing.
All right.
So moving on
to points per game as it stands right now, Indy. Especially with the 3 points added tonight, are definitely in first place overall with a 2.04. Red Bulls 2 come in at second place, 1.96. The Rowdies right behind them at 1.93. Pittsburgh and Nashville are coming in at 4 and 5. They're at 1.85 and 1.82, respectively. After that, we kind of go into the other middle third of the playoff picture. North Carolina and Louisville 1.71 and 1.63. It drops to Ottawa with, of course, the loss tonight, assuming it wraps up as a loss. They go down to 1.44, directly above the two-horse race of Birmingham and Charleston. Those boys are at 1.38. Charleston's at 1.36. And St. Louis is at 1.35. So, yeah. When we're looking at that points per game and where the actual separation lies, those teams are literally as neck-to-neck as it gets right now.
Yeah. Your three teams for those two spots, it's going to be those 1.3s. From 1.35 with St. Louis, 1.36 Charleston, and then Birmingham, 1.38. Everyone above it, whether they finish in that order or not, and I don't think that they will, those are your top eight. No one's officially eliminated. Like, even Swope Park down at the bottom with 15 points, 25 games, still could go on a tear, win all the rest of their games, and end up as high as like seventh right now. So you'll start seeing teams start to clinch, I think, in the next few weeks, especially some of these midweek games start to get played out as well, and teams start evening out their games in hand. And we'll see what happens. But, yeah, it's safe to say that we're starting to see it lock in a little bit here.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, and I think, again, we've been – it's hilarious because we predicted this, what, 4 months ago? 3 months ago?
Yeah, I mean, roughly.
We were saying back then that we thought the top 10 right now was going to be the top 10 in the end of the playoffs, and guess what? Like, we've had 9 of the 10 of them are absolutely going to be true.
Do you want to?
Because the only surprise from 4 months ago is Birmingham.
Is Birmingham getting those?
That's it.
Yeah, getting
that's
that,
it.
That. Yeah. So, do you want to make a guess on who the two of the are going to be?
Oh, I've been consistent with that since the very beginning. I've always believed okay, I guess that's true. I mean, I'm still a
neither of us accounted for Birmingham. I think it was one of those mentioned in the, yeah, sure, something could happen.
Well, because at the time they were garbage.
Yeah, I think they mentioned it. I keep going back to steal some time because I listened to it last night and today. They were involved in a nine-game losing streak, or a nine-game non-winning streak, and now a nine-game non-losing streak in the same season.
Yeah. Yeah, it's insane. It's insane. But
it's a wacky league we got here.
It is a wacky league we got here. No, like I said, I've been thinking from the very beginning that I thought Charleston would be the one team that would drop out. I think St. Louis stays in. So that pretty much gives you my top, the two of those three that I think. It'll be Birmingham and St. Louis. All right, that's my two.
So I know we're saying three teams for two spots. I think Birmingham is going to be, they're borderline saying they're in. Like, I'm not worried about them anymore. Charleston and St. Louis, I don't know who it'll be. I think I said this last week, but whoever it ends up being will be almost as surprised as we are that they got into the spot. Someone 10th place is someone backing in.
At this point, it kind of seems like it now. Yeah, definitely. That is absolutely the truth. I don't think because it's not like Bethlehem's going to suddenly roar to life and make a sudden comeback at the end and storm into play. No, it's somebody's backing into the playoffs, and it may not even be just one team. It might be two of those teams.
Right.
Might be end up backing in it when all's said and done.
God, imagine if Birmingham just collapses in the last eight games and doesn't make it after fighting all the way back up in there.
Oh, don't be mean. That would be funny, though.
I would laugh, but that would be a heartbreaker. By the way, Ottawa has 6 minutes to score two goals and get a draw out of this. It's not looking good.
Yeah, that's a bit done.
I'm surprised by this result. I thought, you know, because they went to Charleston, Indy went to Charleston over the weekend, and the game got pushed to Sunday, and then so they had to account for an extra day in Charleston, and then a real quick turnaround to go home to host Ottawa, and I think they're on the road Saturday. I don't remember. I thought this was the game where they go, you know, okay, we're going to take a draw here. We're going to hope for that as a worst case scenario. They would go out and you know, go full bore at Charleston, go full bore at whoever they've got. Who they have on Saturday? They have they're home. Oh, Bethlehem. Okay, so I can see where you put a little bit stronger team out there for Ottawa, knowing you've got Bethlehem coming in on the weekend to your home field too. Mm-hmm. All right, makes a little bit more sense then. All right, so set up what we're going to talk about next.
So, coming into the off season, some of the off season discussions actually already started. We don't know yet what the venues are, I don't believe, but the first four teams for the Florida Cup were announced.
Let me go look real quick while you're talking about this, because I get the press releases straight from them. Let me see if I can find any more info.
Yeah, they announced the teams today, and we're bringing it up just because we've hosted games in the past, and we kind of secretly revere, if not openly revere, how cool it was, the Nacional versus
I want Moscow and National at Al Lang.
Say what?
I want Moscow and National at Al Lang. That would be incredible.
So, yeah, the four teams coming up, they've already signed on Nacional again. They've got Corinthians confirmed for this one. Palmeiras is another team coming in. And Matt, dropped it there. Spartak Moscow is the fourth team right now currently announced.
I have some info. Okay, it's not going to be Moscow. It's not going to be any teams actually participating in the tournament itself. In 2020, the format of the competition will follow the same as 2019 with four participating clubs. In coming weeks, organizers will release the game table with the clashes. Besides the four games that will be held at Exploria Stadium, home of Beep, on 15th and 18th January... The novelty, and this is the Portuguese being translated into English, the novelty will be an exhibition match between two teams of the Bundesliga days before the tournament starts. Eintracht Frankfurt, isn't that where Stefan's playing right now? Isn't Stefan on loan? Eintracht Frankfurt, who returns to Orlando after playing in the Florida Cup in 2019, and Hertha Berlin. The Germans will face off on January 9th, single friendly match, which will mark the official opening of the event in 2020. The match will be played at Al Lang Stadium in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Hey!
So, mark your calendars now, January 9th, 2020. Eintracht Frankfurt, who I think is where Zach Steffen's on loan to, facing off against Hertha Berlin, which I might have a U.S. national team player there as well. I got to look and see. I'll do a little research while you're talking again, but there's the info.
Yeah. Interesting. That's awesome, guys. So we did get another international friendly in January. So, yeah, that's awesome. That's a great little news blurb there. So we'll put that out, make sure people are aware of it, unlike how people do with the Colombia thing. But anyways, so the other big topic that we wanted to hit today that we've been pushing off for a couple of weeks is U.S. Open Cup, because they've just gone ahead and announced the first of the qualifying games. The schedule for that has just been announced, so the amateur qualifying play-in rounds will start in 2 weeks from now, just about. So obviously there's been a lot of discussion since the final about, and before that too, but specifically the final, about how to make the Open Cup better, because as we all know right now, MLS teams come in pretty late, and a lot of them end up hosting games, even from the very beginning. And there's been a lot of debate over the years as to whether that's the best solution, as to whether how, and not even necessarily if that's the best solution, but just how we can make it better. How can we make the Open Cup something that is noteworthy around the world, like it should, because it's one of the longest running cup traditions in the world. Why isn't this bigger? Why aren't more teams interested? Why aren't more people interested in the tournament? There has been thoughts coming from every which way as to how to do that, whether it's to end regionalization, whether it's to limit the regionalization in some way. there's obviously been a lot of talk on this. Matt, I'll go ahead and hand it over here because I know you've done a lot of research on some of the different competing theories that are out there, because there is. Every writer seems to have a theory on this. What are some of the biggest takeaways that you've seen for ideas that you think actually could be implemented to make the tournament better than what it is right now?
All right, first off, let me correct myself. Stefan is currently on loan to Fortuna Dusseldorf, not Frankfurt. Timothy Chandler's at Frankfurt, though.
Oh, there you go.
All right. Well, the first thing I want to do, I'm going to throw out there, because I have these two articles from Forbes open. I want to throw, because Taylor Twellman kind of went on the rant. I think we've talked about it before at the halftime of the Atlanta Minnesota game. The Open Cup final, and had I think what, like four or five different parts that were his bullet points for his plan to fix this. So I'm gonna go through kind of each one, and we can talk about how we feel about each one, and then we'll go through some of the other competing ideas that are out there. So number one, non-playoff teams, MLS apparently, enter one round earlier. So I think right now, what is it? MLS comes in what, like the third or fourth round? But if you turned it into the non-playoff teams, so that there's incentive, I guess, you know, to put some kind of a other incentive for the playoff. But then again, doesn't it feel like everybody in MLS gets in the playoffs except for Orlando?
Yeah, right. Everybody but Orlando makes the playoffs in MLS.
And Cincinnati?
It's weird because I don't know if that really does anything, because here's the problem. One of the theories behind why that's important is that it's supposed to give those teams a harder chance to make it into the finals, to try and emphasize importance of the table overall and trying to get in the playoffs in MLS. And that's fine and dandy. I don't know how that improves the tournament, though, because I don't know how many people care about, say, the Colorado Rapids.
Right.
You know, like, I just don't see that being a selling point. Like, a really garbage, I don't know. I don't know if that actually improves anything. Like, if Cincinnati were to come to St. Pete tomorrow, does it really matter? Does anybody care?
Well, I mean, there are a couple of Skyline Chilies in Pinellas and Manatee County, so there'll be a cheering section at least. The first thing that jumped out to me, and it's mentioned again in the article too, like, how often does MLS tinker with the playoffs?
Yeah,
doing something like this basically locks them into a playoff format, which is one thing MLS has refused to do, is lock themselves into a playoff format. The another alternative they suggested was letting the four US CONCACAF Champions League representatives to enter the Open Cup a round later. It gives more direct relief to fixture congestion for teams who need it, and also keeps the number of teams receiving a bye stable. And they kind of rated these on in areas of likelihood, said, you know, this could happen. I suspect there'll be some kind of tinkering with when certain teams enter it, and whether it's based on playoff position or whether it's based off, even if you don't do just playoff position, but you say, hey, you cut the Eastern and Western Conference, the tables in half, just based on points from the year before, and you do it that way. I don't know.
You want to do it? Again, it's another factor of, like, I don't know how that improves the tournament. You know, if the idea is to boost lower division attendance, if the idea is to boost revenue, I don't know how delaying the entry of the best teams in America helps that at all.
I don't think it's a guaranteed way to do it.
Why would you not want to have LAFC, who's undoubtedly the best team in America right now? Why would you not want them in the tournament as early as possible for anybody to host? You see what I mean?
Like, yeah, but at the same time,
how does that help?
At the same time, you can portray it or present it as you're kind of dangling these really big teams, like these currently big teams out there, as the reward for, because you know, if you're bringing in MLS teams around earlier, you're the one thing you are doing is increasing the possibility of a lower league team knocking off an MLS team. Because earlier they're coming in, they're going to play even more, you know, rotated lineups and things like that. And then you say, oh, we're going to face, you know, like you, your example, Colorado, with, you know, Tim Howard maybe wearing a, you know, a hoodie on the bench and not playing, with the chance to, if we win this one, then LAFC maybe comes here, like, you know, a week or two later. And you build the excitement up that way rather than blowing it out there in one shot by putting all of them in earlier.
Yeah, but
it's a way to do it.
You already know, though, even with the current format, you already know who the next opponent's going to be.
If you win.
Yeah, but I'm saying you get the way. You know who that team's going to be anyway. So that it doesn't really improve the excitement at all because you still already have that expectation. We win this game. And we end up playing LAFC.
Yeah, but maybe you get people out of their stadium saying they want to be there when they find out they're playing LAFC. Like, you know, be there in attendance for it or something. The next thing they mentioned was MLS teams play their first game on the road, which I'm generally in favor of this one, but with like one stipulation, because a lot of these lower league teams don't have the level of control over where they play on a regular basis. Maybe outside of their contracted days, like if it's a weekend team or something like that. And if you're bringing in an MLS team, you want to have some place where you can sell some tickets and make some revenue off of it. So I wouldn't say automatically require MLS teams to travel for the first round, but that the lower league team gets the right to claim hosting privileges first. None of this like submitting the bid for it and opening up like. You ask them, hey, do you want to host the game? Cool. Where are you going to host it? All right, that place is legit. It's not a park where half the lights don't work. And there's, you know, one set of bleachers on the sideline. If you've got an actual place where it works to their benefit to make them some revenue through ticket sales, concessions, all that kind of stuff, then yeah. Not a hard thing to implement. This, I think, is probably a out of all the things that he mentioned, probably the most likely to happen.
So here's the part of the problem with that theory, though, because I tend to like it on the surface. Again, if you are in a venue and you have a venue that's acceptable for that round, that level of play, because there are stadium requirements for the specific rounds that you're in, I believe. The only problem that I have with that is that right now, as it stands, there are a lot of teams, from what I understand, even in second division, that openly choose not to host games.
Yeah.
They don't want to. It doesn't. They don't see how it becomes a positive revenue situation for them to host a game, even if it's MLS.
My guess is that, yeah, it would cost them more money to open the stadium and operate for that game when not knowing who you're bringing in.
And even then, like, I mean, you look at things like when the Rowdies played Colorado. Shoot, even when the Rowdies had hosted Seattle the year later, they weren't exactly well attended games.
No,
either one of them. And that's the factor. That's one of the things. It's like, if you were to bring in, you know, a Cincinnati right now for an Open Cup game, how many people are going to show up? So I don't know if I tend to like the idea of having mandatory lower division teams hosting. My thing would be is, I don't know if it's necessarily going to be a mandatory thing. I think it would be if the team wants to host, then they automatically get
it. That's what I'm saying. Give them the right of refusal. If they want to host it, cool. If they don't or they can't for whatever reason, then fine.
And now here's a question. Let's extend the thought. First round only or for all the rounds that a lower division team is in the tournament? Should an MLS team ever get first refusal of hosting a lower division team?
I don't know, because at some point, if you're mandating that teams from a certain division are always traveling. I think at some point you start to tinker with the integrity of the tournament, as much integrity as something run by U.S. Soccer might have. At some point, you've got to go to the and maybe it's not the bid system anymore, but maybe it's, you know, didn't they used to do coin flips, basically?
Well, they still do.
I thought it was sealed bids now, and they opened the envelopes and saw who the teams were that wanted to. I know that at least for the final, it's that way. It's a bid. No, coin toss was final, but I thought it was a bid system for the other way.
Oh, well, that would be news to me, because I always thought that if both teams wanted to host the game, or on the flip side, if neither team wants to host the game, I was under the impression that it was a coin flip that determined it. That was the impression that I had for it.
I thought that's the way it was a few years ago, but I thought it changed in recent years.
Oh, crap. Am I really that far out of date?
Let me look up here.
I might be. I might be that far out of date.
I might have it flipped. Really, let me see here. I just saw something in here. Let's see. Process for determining the site for the Open Cup semifinals and finals was changed in 2013. In past years, site for the final three match tournament had been determined through a sealed bid process. But in 2013, the hosts of those games were determined by coin flip. Home teams throughout the interim tournament were determined by random selection. Okay. I would say, I have to go back and think about it. I mean, at least the first round. I don't know if you do it past that you mandate travel for the higher division team. What I do think you need to do is take some of this, however much this giant pile of cash that U.S. Soccer says they're sitting on, and some of that needs to go towards subsidizing some of the travel expenses for some of these lower league teams that make it into the final round, into the farther rounds. You know, there's the cash prize out there for the team from each division that goes the farthest, but there's got to be more than that too. Like, we shouldn't have to be seeing, you know, GoFundMes and other Patreons and stuff for teams who want to play in the next round. Like, that shouldn't be an issue. There's a way that U.S. Soccer could get involved and do that, I think, that would make it a bit easier on everybody involved.
Agreed. And I'll say this too. And I know we're going to probably, well, this is not even on the list of points here. One thing that's always killed me is, why is there never a dedicated weekend Open Cup fixture?
Yeah,
when you get to the first round, to me, and this is one of the problems that I don't like about splitting up the entry dates for MLS teams in the Open Cup, is that I think it should be a week where just the league takes a weekend off from the schedule, and it should be a big thing. Okay. You take a week off on a weekend. Every MLS team is playing a lower division team on the same day.
When we get to the...
Or the same weekend, if obviously teams can't do it on a Saturday, whatever. But you get the idea. Like, that should be a big splash soccer moment where everybody knows that on a specific weekend, everybody is playing a lower division team. That should be a big deal. Mm-hmm. They do it all around the world. Well, they'll take like a weekend off and everybody plays their domestic cup tournament for a weekend game. It's done like everywhere. Why don't we do it here?
Because we don't do anything that makes sense here.
No, because the answer is it's revenue related.
Generally, it's all money.
Open Cup tickets. Yeah, it's all money related. Money. You can't keep doing this, Bob. Anyways.
The next one, and I'm probably going to gloss over the last one because it was eliminate coin toss for hosting the final. The final's one game. Like, the entire tournament needs work. So I want to kind of focus on some of that stuff more. And this is the one that I kind of disagree with maybe the most. No more regionalization. And Forbes says, to prevent repeated cross-country travel, most of the tournament is contested in regional brackets. It's a practical idea, but one that often makes for repetitive matchups. Portland Timbers and Seattle Sounders seem to meet nearly every year. Sometimes, like, the first round they come in. And I get why that's annoying. Same with Philadelphia and D.C. and so forth. Additionally, it largely diminishes the potential for a rivalry match in the final. Okay, outside of Portland, Seattle, and maybe LAFC, LA Galaxy, what it's kind of growing into, and maybe some of the old school MLS rivalries like DC and Philly. Is there a rivalry big enough that enough people outside of those games, is there a rivalry outside of, in somewhere in the country that enough people outside of those two teams' fan bases are that interested in that you could see in a final? I don't think so. I like the idea of regionalization, especially in the earlier rounds, because if you got lower division team against lower division team, the one thing that maybe builds excitement into it is, hey, it's a team from across town, or it's a team, two teams from possibly even in the same town if it's a big enough area. I think, you emphasize those like regional rivalries first, and then when the MLS team comes in, whoever it is, like, is going to be a big deal to those smaller teams. They want to knock off an MLS team. It's when you start adding in like the USLs and the MLS teams that you start to run into some of these issues. They mentioned at the bottom one tweak that could allow this while lessening travel, and because travel is the big deal, and this is why things in America aren't the way things are in England, because America is so much bigger. One tweak that could allow this while lessening travel is choosing sites to host pods of four teams, beginning at the round of 64, similar to the NCAA men's basketball tournament, with a Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday schedule, i.e. have 16 hosts for round of 64 and round of 32, and then four hosts for the round of 16 in the quarterfinals, and one host for the semis and finals. Might make more sense in terms of travel. It also gives the tournament a format that a lot of non-soccer fans would go, oh, I get what they're doing. Maybe they'll take time out and watch it.
I'm going to cut in on that one. I don't think that works under any circumstance. That's just a fantasy land idea that I don't think would ever happen in reality.
I am against the idea of cutting out the regionalization altogether. You have to factor in the travel.
Here's the thing. There absolutely is. Especially at the early stages of the tournament, you cannot make a true random draw. Like, I don't think that's ever going to be possible. Not for a really, really long time. That being said, there's an argument to be made that, like, when the MLS teams enter the tournament, that maybe it could be a true random draw. But even then, right. I don't even know if that's... I don't know. Like, if I had to take two plates, right? If you were to give me two different clear options, a random draw for every team in... When MLS teams enter the competition, it's a random draw for everybody. Or you give lower division teams the right of first refusal, and every lower division team plays an MLS team all in the same round. I think I would actually rather take the latter. I would rather... having first refusal for lower division teams to host MLS teams and have everybody play lower division versus MLS on one designated weekend rather than a complete open random draw for it.
Yeah, I think a complete open draw just doesn't work.
It doesn't work here.
You've got to do some kind
of
regionalization.
Because, like, you're basically driving from here to Atlanta and you've driven about the entire length of the country.
Right.
That's fine, but yeah, here it doesn't work. Now I'll say this: regionalization in general, here's the thing that I don't think regionalization's the problem. I think the problem is that in certain regions you don't try and mix up the teams that are paired up against each other, because guess what, that Forbes article was exactly right about the tournament. Seattle and Portland play each other basically in the first game of every single stinking tournament that they play in. That's just stupid. Why are we doing that? Like, why is it that the teams in the Northeast are basically playing each other every single year? It's the same two stinking teams that play each other in those rounds. I don't get it. Like, I don't get why that keeps happening. There's no reason why you can't have Seattle or Portland travel down and play San Jose or something like that instead of each other right away. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's really an argument for regionalization versus other regions. I think it's really just the fact that the process that they have, they don't mix it up enough. Like, they don't try and fudge different regions. Like, say, one year having Seattle and Portland dedicated to California teams, and then other years maybe you throw in like a Real Salt Lake and a Colorado and have that be a region, and like every other year you alternate. You know, I don't see, or even just split them up entirely, have one team go to down the West Coast and have the other team maybe go more interior, so right. That way they're not even in the same region. I don't think the regionalization aspect is a valid argument. I think they just do it poorly.
The other issue is because your regionalization is more of a factor with your lower league teams, and there's so much churn of these teams year by year that you've got teams coming in one year that don't exist the next year. You've got a couple teams that are kind of holdovers year in and year out. You can't build any kind of momentum or roots like that when you've got teams just up and disappearing on a yearly basis. And if you can't build the momentum at the bottom, you can't keep it going forward either. The one thing that this is the last thing we're already kind of going over on time limit. It's 9:15. And you mentioned it, having some kind of established traditional dates, whether semifinals or finals. I saw mentioned, you know, playing the final on the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame induction weekend in September.
In a central location in Dallas.
I'm even okay with doing the semifinals there. So you take the semifinals, put them in that location, and the final is, you know, you do it at at one of the team stadiums or something like that. Like that, I think if you've gotten to the final and you're a team that's played well, like there needs to be a way to earn that privilege of hosting the final. Also, I don't think you get a huge crowd, even in a centrally located place, coming out midweek for an Open Cup final. Which again, semifinal and final needs to be on a weekend.
We're not at a place right now. Well, yeah, okay, so there's two aspects to this, right? We're not at a place right now that I don't think we're going to do neutral site, even a final. I don't think we're there for a really, really long time. Until we start, like, averaging more than, say, a million TV viewers for each weekend in MLS for at least one game, we're nowhere near having the audience capable of supporting their team at a neutral site location. I don't think that works at all right now. But I would say this, I wouldn't mind seeing the Open Cup schedule kind of moved up a little bit.
Okay.
As far as timing, where, say, like, as far as set dates, one thing that was pointed out in the Forbes article was trying to anchor it on holidays. So, like, for instance, Labor Day is, like, May 29th, May 28th, something like that, is Labor Day, I think. Right now, that's the third round of the Open Cup. So that's the same week that we played Oklahoma this year for that round of the tournament.
Labor Day, September 2nd.
No, Memorial Day.
Oh, yeah, Memorial Day. You said Labor Day.
Sorry.
Because I was picturing Labor Day as being, if you could do this right. Now, it doesn't line up with having semifinals on induction weekend. Maybe you do semifinals on but tying something around Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, I'm thinking early in the tournament. I'm sorry.
Especially if we're still calling soccer like the blue collar sport, something on Labor Day weekend is a good tie-in.
I like that too. Yeah, for later rounds as far as that's concerned, but I think like a Memorial Day weekend, extended weekend for everybody, make that the day that everybody that's an MLS team plays somebody on a weekend. Have it be on that holiday weekend.
Yeah, find a holiday weekend where you can kick it off. And a holiday weekend where you can end it.
I don't even know. No. See, that's the thing, though. I don't even think it's really a kickoff and an ending. Because I think it could be a mid-tier, a mid-round.
Maybe when the pro teams come in? USL and the non-playoff MLS teams?
I'm going to stick to my guns on this one because I think right now we already play. Right, it's the third round right now for when Memorial Day lands on the tournament.
Right.
I think if you bump the tournament up like 1 week or 2 weeks, whatever it technically is, and you have the MLS teams enter in the, you know, whether it's, say, the fourth round, just for giggles, and that fourth round is played on the Memorial Day week, I think that is on a weekend, and you just make that a dedicated Open Cup week where every MLS team plays. I think that's the way to do it.
We're going to have to break out like a map and a spreadsheet and figure this all out.
Yeah, right? We're going to be the crazy guy going, with the map in the background.
We can do that. All right.
Yeah, there you go. We'll Photoshop you and me being the crazy people in front of maps and graphs and
I like
lines.
I like that. Presenting our open a modest open cup proposal that doesn't involve cooking babies and stuff like that. All right, you got the reference, or you're at least you're pretending to, and I appreciate it.
Here you go.
All right. Also, one last thing: having a sponsor for the tournament, a title sponsor, a sponsor injecting money into the system.
I think yes. We need one just because it needs more money.
It might get more money. The sponsor might get you on TV at least.
But you know what? I think they're
ESPN runs how many of these college football bowl games, the postseason ones?
Yeah, right.
Can't we get like ESPN the Ocho sponsoring the US Open Cup?
You know, here's the thing. I bet generally speaking, I bet that they actually do have a shopping for it. Here's the problem. I bet they're probably asking for the wrong amount of money.
Yeah, probably.
So I would gander to bet that they probably do shop the naming rights or whatnot for the whole thing. But anyways, I got nothing else.
All right, so let's talk about Atlanta United real quick. They suck.
They suck.
Like they suck overall. 16 they suck away.
Overall.
They suck in their last five. They sucked when we beat the crap out of them. They suck. They allow almost 2.5 goals per game because they suck. They've kept 2 clean sheets the entire season because they suck. We should beat them. Papi Diakite is still one yellow away from a suspension. And in addition to all the records we've been breaking lately, all the history we've been making, Damo Duro is now cleared of his he's had one yellow card erased. He's sitting on 6 right now in the eyes of USL. I believe he's the first Rowdies player to ever earn a reprieve from being on the edge of a yellow card suspension
for
accumulation. I'm pretty sure.
We're gonna phone a friend to our stats department, and we're going to find that out.
Also, the other cool thing is when you type in hashtag free Dom Oduro, it looks like Freedom Oduro, which is a cool name, too. So I'm going to go with that. Predictions. Rowdies are going to win 3-0. I'm sticking with 3-0 until we do it.
Interesting. And you made a joke about 2-0 earlier today. I am going to go with the prediction that you had earlier this night. I think it'll only end up being a 2-0 result.
Okay. All right, let's wrap this up so we can get out of here. We love you. Have you figured it out yet?
No.
You will when I start explaining why. You'll figure this out in about 30 seconds.
Okay, hit me.
He's been going to road games for 10 years.
Yes!
I think we've lost track of how many he's gone to.
You know what's funny? Okay, hold on. I'm pretty sure.
It took me all of... He's been going to road games for 10 years, the entire time the modern Rowdies have existed, and he has never seen a road win. I think I saw a road win my third trip.
I wrote this down too. I feel so ashamed.
That win in Fort Lauderdale, the Georgie hat trick.
The Georgie hat trick.
That was my first road win. I've seen road draws. I've seen road losses, but I have seen road wins. 10 years he's been doing this. To the point where he was convinced it was him, and we all said no, it wasn't you. I heard after the game Neil Collins came up and said, "We told you it wasn't you." Garrett gets the we love you for the night. Like, honestly, when we won the game, the first thing I tweeted wasn't, "Hey, we won the game and got 3 points. We're back in second." It was, "Oh my God, Garrett saw a road win."
Yes.
I literally almost picked against us last week because I knew Garrett was going.
Yeah. I had it written down. Garrett was my we love you too. I put that in my game notes when I watched the game at the pub this weekend.
He gets the we love you. All right. Thank you guys for continuing.
And for what it's worth, it's fully deserved.
Absolutely. Thank you to Wolfface, to Radio Shapeet, and Shamrock. We will be at Shamrock next week for the Rowdies' final Wednesday game of the year. They have a Friday one coming up later on. We'll have to talk about what we're going to do for that one. If you're in the area, come on out. We are going to be basically tailgating. There will be food on grill. I'm not sure what different foods will be out there, but there will be food on grill. So coming out for some free food, watch the game, stay for the show. Thank you to everybody for continuing to share, subscribe, rate, and review. And also, you know, listening is a good, is more than what I was doing earlier when I started making Tenari references, apparently. If you'd like to support the show on an ongoing basis, go to patreon.com/unusedsubspod. We might give you the chance to sit here and chat smack with us during the show. Or watch the video or put video feeds out there. We'll figure something out. Thank you again to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier of MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get custom scarves for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com. Steven, I will see you on Saturday. I will not have a dog with me, though, because I do not own one, unfortunately.
Well, that makes two of us. I don't own a dog either.
I might come home with one, but I'm definitely not coming there with one.
Maybe I'll join you to join the Steal Some Time crew.
All right. I think we're going to pull Pendleton over, too, because everybody loves Pendleton.
Yeah.
Like, at first, when I invited random USL people to say, hey, why don't you meet me for a beer in the stadium, they were like, oh, yeah, we could work something out. I'm like, I could get Pendleton to come over, and they're like, oh, yeah, we're there. Everybody loves Mike.
Everybody loves Mike. All right. That's because Mike is awesome.
He is. He's the emperor. I'll see you guys on Saturday. Let's get out of here.
We love you, Rowdies.
The Rowdies were here, the Rowdies were there, they kicked the wall around. The Rowdies were here, the Rowdies were there, and they pulled the ground. Oh, the Rowdies, the Rowdies, the Rowdies are the kick in the grass.